Half-Life Alyx is confirmed and armless, but really, that's okay. Plus, I did get my Google Stadia's Founders Edition, and it works. Tonight is November 24th, 2019, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And What Up G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
That's right. Right before I eat way too much. Right before family comes over and we get to show off what we did at the house. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a pre-Thanksgiving edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history, which we're going to be doing a little bit tonight. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here in here on Twitch, here on Sunday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, that's when we record the show. So if you listen to the audio podcast and you're free on Sunday nights, which you might not be, it's a common time to spend with family. I understand. But if you are free, go on over to our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. That is where I will try to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. Or you can call in on our Discord. So go to VogNetwork.com/Discord. That's where we've got a text chat channel during the week. You can feed me stories, feed me your opinions. I'll try to remember them. I actually forgot to read some of them last week. I apologize. But you can also go to the website, VogNetwork.com. Comment on the episode pages there as well. So before we get into anything, we're going to kind of start on the downer. And this is the part where we're going to reminisce just a little bit. But a very influential figure in my gaming past passed away this week at the age of 51. And his name was Brad McQuaid. And Brad McQuaid was the one of the formative hands in the creation of EverQuest, which was not the first MMO. It wasn't obviously the last, but it was the MMO that made a huge impact on me. I don't even know if it was really the first fully 3D MMO. I'm not sure if Meridian 59 took that first, but it was really the first mainstream 3D MMO. We had MMOs before, like Ultima Online was earlier, but they were 2D. They were your isometric 2D MMOs. EverQuest really made it 3D and was really my first introduction to real 3D multiplayer gaming. And Brad McQuaid had a whole lot to do with it. And, you know, I just remember the first time I ever logged into it. With my 3DFX Voodoo 2 card. I had bought a 3DFX card just to play EverQuest in 1999 when it came out. And I made a Wood Elf Bard. And you start off in Kellithin. And I still remember the Kellithin song, which you're hearing now, by the way. I don't care if this gets muted. But, you know, I remember hearing this, and I still remember all these sounds like it was yesterday. And it was 20 years ago. Yes, I understand I'm 29 plus. But EverQuest was really a huge part of my life from about 1999 to about 2003, 2004. Very, very much a part of it. And I was actually in with a guild that kind of... The Brad McQuaid, he was known as Eridun. So you know how Richard Garriott is Lord British. Well, Brad McQuaid was Eridun, and that was his character in EverQuest as well. And very early on, he took a big interest in the player base. And the guild that I was in was called the Sorbear. I think that's even how you pronounce it. I'm actually not even sure how you pronounce it because we never spoke. But we were a guild of bards. And we actually would go, we were on Fenin Row, which was the unofficial role-playing server. And we went around and we did concerts, which was basically poetry. We would write poems. We would play the level 12. We would all rush to get to level 12 bard so we could actually play the lute animation. And we would basically play the lute animation, type really fast, type a concert, and people would appear. And we would do that. In fact, if you remember the first EverQuest, the reason Freeport has a stage, like an actual like stage where you can act on, was because of that guild. And it's because they did, before I joined Sorbet, I think it might have even been during the beta, Eridun showed up to that concert that we did and joined the group of Jithri, who was the guild leader. And just the fact that he would do that, and he took an interest in the role players, even though he was trying to make this MMO action game where you're getting loot and killing monsters, but he took he took pride in like some of the role playing elements of just the people talking, and that said a lot to me about Brad as a game designer. And I'm glad it was before social media. There was no real social media outreach. I mean, they probably had a message board in the 90s, in 1999 when this happened. But, like, we didn't see him on Twitter, and we didn't see any of that. So it was just something that that really spoke to me at the time, and it meant a lot when that happened. And when I joined the Sorbet, I never got to meet Eridun himself, but it was already legendary. And when I say that it was a lot of big part of my life. If you're watching on Twitch, you can actually see I've actually got a whole bunch of the big boxes, like big actual PC boxes, because I bought the first couple expansions. But not only that, like I actually attended the EverQuest fanfares, and I was what was called a guide in EverQuest, which is basically a sucker, is what it is. But I was they had volunteer customer service reps before you got to the actual employee that could actually do things with your account. They actually gave, like, I had a free account, and then I was actually on the Valenzek server, which was a team PvP server. Valenzek and Talonzek were the team PvP servers, which basically meant you could PvP against the other teams, and there were four teams. So, like, wood elves, half elves, and gnomes were one team, and humans. And then you had, like, the evil team, the trolls, orcs, and dark elves, and then there were two other teams from the other races. And you could PvP there, and then Rallus Zek was the everybody can PvP everybody and gank all their stuff at level 1 and stuff like that. But I was actually one of the customer service people, so I could actually, if you died and your corpse was stuck in a wall, I could bring it out so you wouldn't lose all your stuff. Because in EverQuest, when you died, you had to go back to your corpse, and you had to go find it and loot all your stuff off of it. And you lost experience, by the way. So it was the Dark Souls of MMOs, and Dark Souls didn't come out for another 15 years. But I actually attended some of the fan fests as a guide. This one's from the Orlando, Florida one, but that's not the only one I went to. This one is from San Diego, California. So the one time I was in San Diego, I was at that one. And then I think this is the first one. It was in Baltimore. So I actually, in 2001, I went around the country hanging out with EverQuest players. I never really got to meet Brad. I was more meeting with like the GMs that actually worked at Verint Interactive at the time before they changed their name 8 million times. But Brad built that world, or he helped build the world. He was not the only creator, but he was kind of the face of EverQuest. And Questbuster even said he was Mr. EverQuest. It kind of hit a little bit. He was also really young. He was 51. This episode is dedicated to the memory of Brad McQuaid and how he shaped me. And EverQuest was really my first in-game volunteering experience. And after doing the EverQuest guiding for a bit, I went on to help moderate the forums at the G4 Television Network, which then got me with Scott Rubin. And did All Games Network, and this podcast started on All Games Radio because I was helping him out because I was a sucker for volunteering for other people. And then VOG Network was created many years later, and here I am talking to you. So really, this podcast possibly is this dude's fault. So you're welcome. And thank you. Gonna miss you. So let's move on to more recent stuff. and Google Stadia came out. And I didn't know if I was going to get it. They were having issues with supply, but I actually got the delivery. I got the shipping notice on Tuesday, and then my Founders Edition came on Wednesday. So indeed, I actually do have my Founders Edition of Google Stadia, and there's a lot of reviews. I mean, I can't really add to the reviews that are already out there on the web. And I don't do reviews anyway. I do impressions because I don't give scores. I don't do any of that stuff. But I wanted to try it for myself. And these TLDR version is it works. It does what they say they're going to do. So you take the top off, and they do have the Apple style packaging where it's all pretty and stuff. And then this is the Stadia controller, which theoretically is blue. And I guess, and see, now that I'm holding it on the screen. I'm holding it under my Elgato key light that shines a really bright light in my face. And this is the first time I've actually seen the blueness of this controller. So it is a blue controller. It's not black. It looks black in every other light except for this one that I'm using to light my face for this podcast. But it's the controller itself, because this is the new piece of hardware. Everything else is normal hardware. It really feels good. It's kind of weighty like the Nintendo Switch Pro controller. I do like the D-pad. It's not like a rocker D-pad. It does feel like it's actual like four buttons. So it feels nice. The sticks are good. Everything feels good. This is not a cheap controller. And so good for them on that. Now, the rumors were true that the only way you can use this controller wirelessly is with a Chromecast. So if I take the little insert out of the box here, you do have to plug it in to another computer if you want to use it somewhere else. And all they come with, because I know this was a big thing that we were worried about, they do give you an AC adapter, and then they give you a USB-C standard charge cable that has the big USB on one side and the USB-C on the other. That's all they give you. Now, granted, I don't think this is available in stores. So, like, you have to be a sucker to have bought it on their website. You're not going to go to Best Buy and pick one of these up. So I know somebody's like, if they don't give you every adapter, if they don't give you the lightning adapter, if they don't give you anything, then it's a non-starter because it's going to confuse people. But I think this cable is pretty much all anybody else gives you, too, in terms of controllers. So if you want to use it with your computer, you have to get this bundle that also comes with a Chromecast Ultra. And so that's what was in the bottom of this box. And in this box also, they actually have, like, stickers. So you could, if you really wanted to put a Google Stadia sticker on your Chromebook, you can. I'm going to leave them right in there and not even pull them out. But the reason that you have to plug it in wired is because of the way the Chromecast works. So the Chromecast is actually just this little tiny circle thing with an HDMI cord coming out of it. And it's actually kind of neat because it's actually magnetized. So when you're not actually using it, it just snaps right to the Chromecast and stuff. And then it's got on one side, it's got a USB-C connector. So you can so you plug it in. It doesn't run off batteries. But this is all it is. And when I say this is all it is, literally, this is all it is. I mean, it does come with an AC adapter, thankfully. But unlike a Fire TV stick or a Roku, there's no remote control for this. Not even the Stadia controller acts as a remote control. How a Chromecast works, if you don't have one, and I had never had one before either, is that you actually control it from your phone. You actually control it from, like, your phone or your browser, and basically you're using your phone, and you can do this on your phone, and you can say, oh, I'm watching YouTube, play it on my Chromecast. And you hit a button, and you say Chromecast, and suddenly your Chromecast then opens up the YouTube app and plays it on YouTube, or it opens up the Twitch app and plays it on Twitch. But your phone is actually doing all the work, or your computer if you're casting from a Chrome browser. So there's no remote because you literally can't control this. You plug it in, and you actually have to have a Google app called Google Home on your phone, and that's how you configure it. That's where you name it. That's where you say the time zone. That's where you set what the screensaver is. Or you can, once you sync the Stadia up to a screen, is how they say it. So right now, the only screen you can sync it to is a Chromecast Ultra. I can then hit the button in the center, hold it down, and it'll rumble, and it'll flash, and it'll be ready for me to put in a combination that shows up on the screen, which for me is up A, down A. And then it will actually try to connect to the Chromecast, and right now it's buzzing at me saying, your Chromecast isn't on. I can't find it. That's because it's sitting right here and not hooked into my TV. So that's why it doesn't work wirelessly. It is talking over Wi-Fi because I actually monitored my packets, and I could actually see this controller talking over Wi-Fi. So it was actually doing that. I've not actually plugged it into my computer and tried it, although the first night I did use Stadia in Chrome just fine with my existing wireless Xbox One controller. And I ran it on my computer just fine. So that's, I guess, why you can only associate it with one screen, which you need the Stadia app to do that. So I had to download two brand new apps to my phone, Google Home and Google Stadia, to be able to have everything talk to each other. And you need to enable your location access in the phone app to be able to do that. So you can't. So then I guess you can turn off, and I haven't done it yet. But if you don't want them tracking your location, you have to turn it on for them to see stuff. I don't know. Tyclaw says, a controller that works over your Wi-Fi network, that's new. Yeah, it's actually what they had said about 6 months ago. Like, that part's not new information. And the reason they do it is because technically your controller is connecting directly to the Stadia servers. It's not going through your computer and then going through that computer's connection. It's actually directly connected to your router, and it's talking directly to the servers. And Questbuster says, looks like he's got his founder's code okay, like others. Yeah, they actually sent me the code Tuesday night. I got the shipping notification a couple hours later. I got the code, so I signed up, and then I was actually using Stadia Tuesday night on my computer through Chrome. YYR in chat says, Google's point of view on this is probably they've used the Chromecast already. This should work the same way. But once you get, once you have it synced to that screen, then yes, you can actually use all of Stadia's features pretty much. And I say pretty much with just this. You don't need to put in your phone. Now, the actual store, you have to use on your phone. So in order to buy games for $60, or if you're a pro member, they do give you some discounts. I think Tomb Raider's $20 if you have pro. And some of the games that are $60 are down to $40 if you have pro. A lot of games like Red Dead Redemption 2, no, that's $60. You got to buy that. Questbuster says, don't leave us in breathless anticipation. What did you play? So they actually added a second free game. I have not played Destiny 2 yet. I don't know why. But when I was doing tests, it was actually a lot easier for me to just play the other game they gave us free, which was Samurai Showdown, which is a fighting game. It's a 2D fighting game. So, if you really want to try to figure out if there's lag and latency, what better way than a fighting game? Which I played both on my computer with a keyboard, but also in 4K 5.1 down in my theater with the Google Stadia controller. And it works. I'm a terrible fighting game player. So I am not that great at it. But to me, I didn't suck any worse at Samurai Showdown than I do at a Street Fighter or something that I'm playing locally. I didn't really notice that many graphical degradations. There was one time I loaded it up and the sound was really weird, like it was popping so I basically closed down the game and reopened it. I didn't even shut down the whole Stadia thing. I just closed the game, reopened it, and got a better connection, and it worked fine. But it worked. Now you got to realize I have a good internet connection. I have, I think, 150 down. And 10 up. So that's why it works for me. And it's a very steady connection. It's very good. I am very fortunate to be in a place that has a good internet connection. And I did look. I kind of monitored my bandwidth usage in real time. And when I was running it in 1080p, which is what I was running on my computer, it was jumping between 20 and 40 Mbps. So you're going to need at least that much to do 1080p. It was 10 to 20 when you were in menus and things weren't really happening, and load screens were even lower than that. But when you were actually, like, when I was actually fighting and you know, kicking butt on easy, it was about 40 at 1080p. When I took it downstairs and hooked it up to my 4K theater in 5.1 and played Samurai Showdown, it jumped up. It would be about, it would still be actually 20 in the menus, but then it would jump up to 60 Mbps when I was actually doing all the fighting in 4K with 5.1 surround. So that's kind of what you're looking at. And there was actually a, there was actually an article done by PC Gamer, or was it PC Gamer? VentureBeat, sorry. VentureBeat, that actually, where he actually tracked the usage. And he was playing other games. He was playing Red Dead Redemption 2, which I'm not going to pay $60 just to try Red Dead Redemption 2. And he said he played for 13 minutes at 1080p, and the data usage, he used 1.5 gigs of data in that 13 minutes. So it was about 119 megs a minute, which means during the hour, it's 7.14 gigs. So, and that's at 1080p. 4K should be about 20 gigs in an hour. I can't remember what it was. I think it was 20 gigs a minute or something. It's going to use a lot. And he actually made the comparison in this VentureBeat article. Red Dead Redemption 2 takes an average of 47 hours to beat, which means at 1080p, it's actually going to be 335 gigs of data to beat it. The game itself is 150 gigs. So you're actually going to spend twice the amount of data playing it on Stadia than you would actually downloading it to an Xbox. It's going to use a lot, and it's about, Xfinity has a 1 terabyte cap, data cap, at 20 gigs an hour doing 4K Stadia, and it looks like it actually uses more data than like streaming like Disney Plus in 4K. It's about 50 hours if you have a data cap. If you don't have a data cap, congratulations. If you have fiber somewhere, that's great. So then you're not going to have to worry about it. But those of us who do have a data cap, you will. One thing to note, if you've never used a Chromecast before, another one of the things that you're going to notice is when I show you the Chromecast, it's like this little box and a little circle, and it's got a little USB thing. And you're like, but wait, I have a gigabit Ethernet network in my house. How do I hook it up? Well, actually, in a really weird twist, here's the AC adapter, and you're going to actually want to look on the AC adapter itself, and the AC adapter has the Ethernet port. So you're not, you don't plug the Ethernet, you don't plug the network into the Chromecast, you plug it into the AC adapter, and that's where you get your Ethernet. Now, the funny thing is, it doesn't actually use gigabit, it just uses 100. So if you... you're going to actually see that it only uses the 100 side. It doesn't actually use the full gigabit, but it doesn't need to because it's the top is really going to be 60 megabits per second. So it'll be fine. PodCulture says that's a short waiting to happen. Well, that is, this is the way Google wants to do it, which means I was like, okay, I got to like stretch this cord down to my, my power strip instead of having it where I can usually get to it. So just so you know, that's a thing. But you can also do it over Wi-Fi if you're close enough to your Wi-Fi router. So the technology works. And I didn't notice that much lag. It absolutely works. And I can see that this is where games are going. Google Stadia, the service, it's like those old ads that AT&T did. I don't know if you remember these ads. They're from like 1992, 1993. Tom Selleck was the announcer. And it was all these ads about the future. 1992. Imagine, if you will, sending a fax from the beach. Imagine being able to watch any movie you want at any time. Imagine, you know, having a video call. You know, imagine picking your seats from a computer terminal for a concert. Stuff like that. Stuff we all do now. And it was great. Like, the ad campaign was amazing. Except for the very last line. And the very last line of each of those commercials was, and the company that will bring it to you is AT&T. This is the future. Game streaming, where you don't have your own hardware, you play it on any screen, this is going to be the future. But the company that will bring it to you will not be Google. It will not be Google Stadia. It will be maybe Microsoft with xCloud. It might be Sony with PlayStation Now. It might be somebody we haven't even heard of. Nobody in 1992 thought Apple was going to bring us the stuff that AT&T all said they were going to do. And I think that's going to be the case here. This service, Google is not going to have the infrastructure to do a gaming service the way they should. YYR says, this is the future has been said about both streaming and VR, but VR has really high latency, frame rate, bandwidth requirements. So which is the future? They can both be the future. ¿Por qué no los dos? Tarklaw says, I have an NVIDIA Shield, and it comes with its own video game streaming service called GeForce Now. Yes. And, I mean, OnLive was a thing. So an AntStream Arcade, which is the retro streaming, that's a thing too. Any of them could do a better job than Google is. I think Google, they're getting the tech out there, and then somebody else is going to run with it. So check this out, guys. Check this out. This is going to be great.
Have you ever renewed your driver's license? At a cash machine?
Nice picture.
You will. And the company that'll bring it to you, it's AT&T.
Wrong. It's not going to be AT&T. Not going to be wrong. Not going to be them.
Have you ever watched the movie you wanted to? The minute you wanted to?
Yes, we have.
Learned special things.
That's all taken from jazz.
Now, any questions? From faraway places.
Yes, we have.
Where did jazz come from?
Good question.
Or tucked your baby in. From a phone booth.
Well, maybe not a phone booth, but from our phones.
You will. And the company that'll bring it to you, AT&T.
Not them. Not AT&T.
Have you ever kept an eye on your home when you're not at home?
Yes, I have.
Or gotten a phone call?
Hello. How was your day?
On your wrist?
Yes, we have.
You will. And the company that'll bring it to you, AT&T.
But not AT&T. AT&T didn't bring it to us.
Have you ever opened doors?
I'm home.
With the sound of your voice?
Yes, we did.
Our car, please. Carried your medical history in your wallet?
Yes, we
your
do.
It's going to be just
some good.
Where we stand on the atrium.
Or attended a meeting.
I really like what you guys have been doing, but
in your bare feet.
Yes, actually, I did that just
you
this
will.
Past week.
And the
but not through AT&T.
Bring it to you, AT&T. Have you ever had a classmate?
Yep.
Love a bike.
Who's thousands of miles away?
Yes.
Nowadays, yes.
Conducted business in a language you don't understand.
Yeah, I think some people can. Yeah.
Or kept an eye on your home when you're not at home.
Anyway, so.
You will. And the company that'll bring it to you.
Not AT&T. Not AT&T. AT&T may be your provider, but they didn't actually make all that stuff, it turns out. Like, Amazon did some of it, and Apple did some of it, but it wasn't AT&T. So, yeah. Breakman says, can we just have Tom Selleck come to us instead? He can come to all of our homes, tell us how cool he was in the 80s. Yeah, I like bringing up those commercials every once in a while. So, the reason I played those is because game streaming is going to be the future, and the company to bring it to us will not actually be Google. But people are going to take a lot of Google's technical ideas and technical expertise and then actually make a good service around it. And then everybody's going to be doing this in about 5-10 years. Speaking of things we're not going to be doing in 5 or 10 years, we're going to be doing it next year in like 4 or 5 months. Half-Life Alyx. That's right. Not Half-Life 3. It's like Half-Life 1 point something or other, I don't know. Half-Life 1.2 or something, but it is the new VR experience, the new VR game from Valve. Half-Life, you play as Alex. You get a head crab on your head, flies at you in VR. Coming out, it's like Half-Life 1.5. It takes place between Half-Life 1 and 2. Valve's first big game, I guess since Dota 2, I think. Like, first, like, internally produced game. And it's being made for VR only. It's got the same kind of humor as you find with the other Half-Life and the Valve games. But it's being made for basically the Valve Index, which is their new VR system. And it will work with the other system. So it'll work with an Oculus Rift. It'll work with an HTC Vive. It'll even work with the Oculus Quest with the Link cable. They're not making it for the Quest itself. But then you'll be able to play it on any of those. And this is going to get people to buy VR just for this, I believe, because everybody's wanted Half-Life. We've known for a while that the next Half-Life was going to be a VR experience. We all thought it was going to be Half-Life 3, but no, it's Half-Life Alyx, which has no 3 in it. And it's coming out, guess what? In March of 2020. So they waited until the end to talk about it. I'm excited for it, even though I probably won't play it too much, because everybody can finally now say that Half-Life has come out for VR. So Tiger Claw brings up the question that was all over in our Discord. And why does Alex not have arms? Wouldn't that break the immersion? And the Breakman says, I like the interacting, moving stuff out of the way on the shelf. Small details make me happy. That's all actually stuff that we wind up doing like in VR. So this is, for a lot of people, this is going to be a lot of people's first foray into VR. So you have some idea of how things are supposed to be or how you think things should be. And you're like, why didn't they think of that? Well, I will tell you that we did think of it. Kaijudo says, I don't think it's going to get many gamers to try VR. What's going to happen is gamers are going to complain and beg for a non-version just like they did for Bridge Crew. You can think that all you want, but the comments on social media say different, that people are ready to jump into VR finally. But anyway, back to the question at hand. Is why does Alex not have arms? Because what they show in the trailer is they show disembodied hands, which is actually what you see in most VR games right now. Most, not all. And the reason for that is because all they can track is your hand. And in fact, they know pretty much where your knuckles are on your hand, especially if you're using the Valve Index. They know where your knuckles are, and so they basically tracked that. But the problem is, the tracking that we have today does not know where your elbow is. So what I want you to do, if you're listening on the podcast, is basically, and as long as you're not driving. If you're driving, don't do this. But what you can do is you can hold your fist out in front of you, and then what I want you to do is then turn your wrist 90 degrees. Just your wrist. Now, that's one movement. Now, instead of turning your wrist 90 degrees, turn your elbow 90 degrees. You will notice that the movement that your hand makes and the controller that you're holding in that hand, if you are holding a controller, is exactly the same if you're moving your elbow or your wrist. So since we don't know where your elbow is, it breaks the immersion more than if you just don't see your arms at all. I know that's going to be a hard concept to get if you've never used VR before. But without having a full body suit, which they exist, but I don't think consumers are ready for it yet. I know I'm not, because then you'd have to get multiple sizes that fit multiple different people. The technology exists. I just don't think consumers are ready for it. Until we get that, if we have arms visible, then the game's not going to know if your elbow is turning or your wrist is turning, because all it knows is what your hand is doing. And so if it guesses wrong, that breaks the immersion even more. It's the same reason you don't see your own feet in VR. You do see them when you're playing on a monitor and you look down, there's your feet, everything's great. But in VR, they don't know if you are standing with your legs apart. They don't know if they're together. They don't know if you're at parade rest, which is a term of like where they're at 45 degree angle at the side at the in the end point. They don't know any of that. You do. Your brain does. So you look down and you see that your feet are in a different actual position than your real feet. Your brain will freak out. And if you want to know what VR sickness is, it is when your eyes and your brain have believe different things. And your brain believes that you've been poisoned because your eyes and your nerves disagree. It thinks you've been poisoned, so then it tries to puke out the poison. That's what VR sickness is. That's what all motion sickness is. That's what air sickness is, seasickness. It's when your eyes and your brain don't agree on what's happening. And so the arms and your feet and your legs not being there in VR is actually better than having them be wrong. So until we get the full-on bodysuit that tracks everything and can accurately say you have size 12 feet, you don't have size 8 feet or, you know, something like that. Until we get there, then we're not going to see our arms and feet. What we can see is exactly where our hands are. And it is already kind of weird because Alex probably has smaller hands than I do because I think you play as Alex. So she has smaller hands than I do. So there's already a little bit of that. But it's slight enough that it doesn't hurt your brain that much. Fifth Room Today says, well, then the computer should just ask what your elbows are doing. Simple. Yes. Maybe when we get that neural implant that's in all the animes, maybe then we will. But we're not there yet. And I'm not ready for neural implants. I'm sorry. You can okay boomer me all you want. I'm not ready for neural implants. Questbush says, one of the few that does the full arms is the Void VR experience. You don't wear anything on your hands, but the rig can still track them. So if I was a Stormtrooper, I could hold out my arms and see them in Stormtrooper armor. So he's talking about the Void, which is a full-on VR experience that does tracking with external cameras. So they actually have a little more to their setup, and it's really cool. They actually just opened a Void here in Atlanta, and I haven't gone yet. It's next to the new Atlanta Braves Stadium. But they do more tracking than what we get with home VR. So they can do it because they've spent thousands and thousands of dollars on the hardware to be able to do it. You're going to be able to play this game on a $300 Oculus Quest with a link cable to a PC. And Dark Tetsuya says, this is why I sent it in Discord. If anyone could explain why they got it wrong, it's him. It's not wrong. They're not wrong in the sense that it would be better. It would be better to be able to see your arms. They're not wrong in that. What they're wrong about is that right now it's not a good idea. Fifth Room Today says Kinect would know where your elbows are. Just saying, it would. Consumers rejected the Kinect. And remember, the PlayStation camera looks at the lights. They don't look at anything else but the lights. So the PlayStation camera can't track your elbows. Tegla says, they'll eventually make a haptic suit that tracks your entire body, just like in Ready Player One. Oh, they've already made it. Like, it already exists. It's just not available for consumers. But no, people have been doing that. And people have been working on haptic gloves that even, will actually not let you, like, if you're picking up a ball in VR, it'll actually stop your fingers from making a fist. It'll actually stop them. So you actually pick up the ball, and it feels like you have a ball in your hand, and it's the glove pushing back against your fingers. They already have that. That already exists, but it's not in like mass market consumer yet. And so the Breakman says, basically, the technology isn't there yet to show arms. The technology is here. It just costs way too much money. And people are already complaining that VR is too expensive. And so instead of showing the arms, you get to pay what we pay now for VR, and you get the hands. So we're going to take a quick music break. And then maybe take a call or two, and we can talk more about this or Stadia or EverQuest, which I've got all my EverQuest games behind me because of Brad McQuaid. But we'll be right back. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hey, this is Randy Varnell with Gearbox Software, and I'm happy to endorse my friend Bobby Blackwood and his little podcast thing. Hey, this is Randy Varnell with Gearbox Software, happy to endorse my friend Bobby Blackwell and his little podcast thing. Hey, this is Randy Varnell with Gearbox Software, happy to be here with my friend Bobby Blackwolf to talk about his little podcast thing.
That was actually my guildmaster from my EverQuest days. He's like the creative director of Borderlands 3. He works at Gearbox. I met him with the Borderlands 2 stuff a while ago, and he recorded that bumper at Dragon Con like multiple years ago. I don't know. I can't remember. Whenever Borderlands 2, whenever the girlfriend mode thing, the Necromancer DLC, whenever that happened, that's when that bumper was created. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be a member of any guild that I was in EverQuest 20 years ago. All you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com. Or you can send me a video. We can talk on Discord. I'm checking to see if anybody's in the green room. Nobody's in the green room right now. We did go a little long on the first segment. But Questbuster, we were talking about Brad McQuaid earlier in EverQuest. And Questbuster said he had because he's got a lot of stuff lying around as well in magazine form. And he says, when asked what the inspiration was for EverQuest by Computer Gaming World magazine, Brad said, quote, "To make a lot of money creating a nerdy role-playing game so that at our next high school reunions we could have the last laugh at all the guys who made fun of us for playing D&D in the library at lunch 20 years ago," unquote. And then also when he was asked where MMOs will be 5 years from then, so this was in 2000, so where will MMOs be in 2005, he says, quote, "I think they'll be the most popular, biggest money-making, and most rewarding immersive games around," unquote. Yes, and like those You Will commercials, the company to bring it to you was not SOE or Varian Interactive, it was Blizzard. Womp, womp. I actually do think we have somebody in the green room. We're going to actually take this call in the green room. So we're going to jump in and see what he wants to talk about. I'm going to pull him in here. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hi, it's Aaron, or YYR as I go by.
YYR, making an appearance on the Bobby Blackwell Show. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind, man?
Well, I mean, I just think this business with game streaming is, pretty interesting. I'm watching and waiting to see what'll happen, and I think that we're going to get into an interesting discussion over the coming years because, I mean, like I mentioned earlier in chat, you have some people saying, oh, well, streaming is the future. Mm-hmm. And then you have some other people saying VR is the future. And mm-hmm. while it's easy to say, well, why not both? The problem is that both can't be the future because they're mutually exclusive.
Correct.
Like Google says, throw out your consoles and your gaming PC. You don't need those anymore because mm-hmm. we have Stadia.
Yes.
And Valve says, okay, now go spend $1,000 on an Index. Hi. My daughter just walked in.
Awesome.
Oops. Go spend $1,000 on an Index and whatever else you need, and you're going to go and you're going to play this amazing VR experience. And the problem is, you know, if we all ditch our consoles and our gaming PCs and we have a streaming future, mm-hmm. how is VR going to work?
So my answer to that is I don't think every game needs to be VR. And so the game streaming, they're trying to target the games you're going to be playing on your phone or on a screen and not necessarily mm-hmm. VR games. So that's why I'm saying why not both. For your screen gaming, then I think that a lot of the game companies are going to gravitate to the streaming model. And VR games, you are going to need some kind of standalone head, even if it's like a Quest that it's a standalone thing. I think that's where that's going to go. But I can see game companies, and you write games, so this may be I want to get your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. The reason I can see game publishers loving the streaming model is because there's nothing to pirate.
That's true. I mean, that's true, and it's nice because then, you know, your DRM is built in. Mm-hmm. But I still think the bigger issue is that VR, as it is right now, I think is in a kind of a weird spot because, mm-hmm. yeah, you have game support, but it's mostly coming from indies and smaller developers.
Yes.
And, you know, the big publishers and the big developers and the big companies, they seem to be doing a wait and see approach because they want, you know, the audience to be bigger first. And a lot of gamers are also taking the wait and see approach. They're waiting for more games. They're waiting for the hardware to improve. They're waiting for the prices to come down. And you know what usually happens when both the publishers and developers and the gamers are in wait and see mode? Usually that means the platform dies. So if we have, you know, 10 to 20 years from now, people, you know, ditching their consoles and things like that because Sony and Microsoft and who else, you know, whoever else is now streaming all their games, what's going to be left for VR? It's, you would need VR to be a much better supported, more widely adopted platform in order for it to survive as more than a niche. And if it remains a small niche like it is now, I mean, is the hardware support going to be there? Are the products going to be there? I mean, you see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah, I do. And I don't have a good answer. But what I do know is that radio didn't kill books and TV didn't kill radio.
True.
And this is because what I hear a lot, if I go on and there's another podcast, another YouTube show I've gone on where they all believe VR is going to kill monitor gaming. There, nobody will play games on a monitor anymore. And I don't believe that.
I don't either.
I think it's something different. It's kind of like how TV didn't kill the radio. So, but we still have radio content and TV content. So I think we can still have streaming game content and VR game content kind of side by side in the future. And so, but they are trying, I know they people are working on getting the latency low enough to where you can stream VR. I don't think the infrastructure's for that yet, but the infrastructure for streaming monitor content is about, is kind of getting out there in certain areas of the U.S., especially urban areas. So I think they're starting from that, and then as soon as they can get enough throughput to do VR with low latency, then I think we will be streaming the VR stuff, but we're far away from that. Where we can stream the games now.
I'll be honest with you. I think we're light years away from it, only because, you know, Google explained, you know, the reason why Stadia is as good as it is for is using a variety of techniques. And, you know, some things that they cited include predictive, you know, input, like where it predicts what you're going to do, and maybe it renders two different possibilities. But the thing is, if it if it's looking at, you know, which way your head is turning, how's it going to predict that?
Right.
I think that it's I think that would be a nightmare, just trying to get it where it needs to be in order to stream VR. I don't know what we I don't know what would need to happen before
I think
that's even possible.
What would need to happen, and this is just me spitballing off the top of my head, is instead of thinking of it as streaming just what's on the screen, they stream the environment that's in front of you. And that way when you turn your head, it's just showing you what it's already streamed to you, but it's
so
showing
that would
it from
be
a
locally
different
locally processed.
Yes.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be a dumb terminal like they're saying, oh, your phone. You would still have to have a dedicated device to do the VR. And it would do some processing, but the majority of the processing would be on the servers. And it would, you know, stream that, to you the environment. And maybe that's one of the tricks they could use to get around it.
You know, that kind of reminds me of what Microsoft was talking about before Crackdown 3 came out, where, you know, we're using the power of the cloud to enhance the gaming experience, but processing is still done locally to some extent.
Yes.
That may be closer to their original vision than than they were able to deliver in the end.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
So right now I'm looking at the Stadia style of streaming as solely for, like, monitor games. And we'll cross the VR bridge when we get to it.
All right, yeah. I really think this is one of the most interesting building topics in gaming.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll have the chance to discuss this many times over the coming years.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Hey, I like my pancakes for now, but
yes,
you know, VR is cool too.
Oh, I still like my pancake games too. And everybody in the VR circles, they're like, how? You've been playing VR games for 5 years. How can you still play Smash Brothers? And I'm like, because it's fun.
Can you play Smash on VR yet?
Actually, yes, you can.
Oh.
You can use... Yes, no, because they added a patch that lets Nintendo Labo... You can actually play one versus four, the computer. You can play in VR on select stages.
Yeah, but that's still not the full game.
It's still not the full game, and it's really kind of awkward to play it like with your hands against your face. But yes, you can play Smash Brothers in VR.
Well, I take back what I said.
All right. Thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Enjoy your week.
You too. So, yeah, that's the call that we're going to take tonight. So coming up next is Orange Lounge Radio, three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we get to start them a little bit late tonight because I got a cool call at the very end. But we like to check in with them and see what they're going to be talking about tonight. So, Sacramento, you guys there?
We are here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing well. Went a little long, but it was a big night tonight. We got Stadia and
I was going to say, that's okay. It happens. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, usually this week would be kind of a slow news week. And I think overall, because, you know, you do a one-hour show, we do a three-hour show, so we have more. We have about 18, I think it's 18 stories in our show roll every week.
Yeah.
And it's a little harder to fill 18 tonight, but I do feel like we have those big whoppers. Perhaps part of the reason why... of all weeks, Valve chose this week to finally go new Half-Life, kind of what you're thinking, probably.
Yeah, well, and that, and I think they were trying to move some Valve indexes for Black Friday because you get Half-Life Alyx free if you own a Valve index.
I have to admit, I haven't super looked into it because I'm going to be honest, I'm probably not jumping on PC VR for this.
Yeah.
If there was a port for PlayStation, I'd be interested, but I'm not going to think that's going to happen because I totally understand Valve's logic behind this. So it's fine. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's not coming to PlayStation VR, but they are at least supporting the Oculus Rift and even the Oculus Quest with that link cable. So they're not making it like Steam VR. Well, it is Steam VR exclusive, but Steam VR runs on Oculus headsets. So they're not like locking it down to their headset.
That is nice, and I think probably a smart move because the PlayStation thing has been so successful. I think if they were to really fragment the PC side of things even more, that could actually be a little more hurtful in some ways. So I can see where it's strategical to Valve to play nice.
Oculus does not play nice. So you actually have to use hacks, which I have used, to Vader Immortal. Is an Oculus exclusive, which means theoretically you can only play it on Oculus devices. I have to use a tool called Revive, which kind of emulates the Oculus stuff and sends it to a Steam VR headset. It works great, but Oculus actually does prevent the Vive and the Index from playing Oculus content.
Yeah, unfortunately, that multi-billion-dollar company that owns Oculus kind of forgot that when you have something on the PC, it's very hard to lock it down, unless you're like always online or something. And even then, there's ways.
And to be fair to Oculus, because I did say they lock it out, they initially started blocking Revive from working. There was enough pushback from the community that they said, okay, we're not going to intentionally block Revive. But because they were actually detecting if it was there and saying you can't do this, but it is up to Revive's developers to make any changes, and they're not going to give them a heads up if they change their SDK or something, but they're not going to actively try to shut it down, which they actually did once. So at least Oculus, kudos to Oculus for that.
I think it would be smarter for the and kudos to for that. I think it would be smarter from my perspective. I know you're more intimately involved with VR. Than I am. I'm a filthy casual, as the case may be. But I think it would be smarter for the PC folks to kind of figure out how they could work more together and maybe sweeten the deal. If they want to move hardware, then they do things like what Valve is doing where, if you buy this one, you get the Half-Life free or things like that. Mm-hmm. Because, with PlayStation 5 on the horizon, and I believe they've confirmed that PlayStation 5 will work with the old PlayStation VR headsets.
They have.
There may be new ones, but they'll work with the old ones. And Sony is, when it comes to VR consumer-wise, is on top right now. So they would be smarter to team up against PlayStation and show why theirs is better than fragment, than make PC a more confusing pool than it already is. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot to be said for the plug it in and it just works. I mean, yeah. That's been a great point for Apple and how they've been so successful with many of their devices.
Yeah. And I mean, the Oculus Quest is basically that device in the, you know, no wires space, in the non-PC space. And I think that's where Oculus is really going, is they want to push the standalone device that doesn't need a PC, because Facebook's goal is to get 1 billion people in VR. And you can't do that with a big, expensive PC.
I think it really truly is only a matter of time before it's glasses. It's just it's as lightweight and it's as intuitive and as comfortable and as fashionable as just a pair of glasses. You know, what's going around Facebook right now is that big decade meme, right? You know, how did I look like 10 years ago? Well, it's funny because the 10 years ago picture, I'm holding my phone. Mm-hmm. And you can even see the differences that phones have come in just 10 years than they are now. And just, you know, think about the PC that you think about the first PC in your house, especially for many like 30 and 40 year olds, you probably had this giant brick of a 386 or a 486 machine that now, like, what fits in your pocket is like thousands of times stronger than I mean, that's how fast technology moves. So that's why I say it's really only a matter of time before something like Oculus, et cetera, is just it's glasses.
I love that 10-year meme because it's helping all the AI do their facial, you know, aging things by, you know, just having everybody post what they look like 10 years ago and then today. And they're like, all right, let's feed this into the algorithm.
Well, that's why you have to post the dumpster for 2009 and then the dumpster on fire for 2019.
Yes, exactly. So what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight?
Well, now the three of us, none of us picked up Stadia, sadly, so we can't talk a lot about that. But
why would we do that?
Exactly. I was suckered. I am having buyer's
remorse. I was under the impression I could stream that controller to my house, but somehow it's not there, so I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Hold on, though, because our show will not be completely empty of Stadia content, thanks to our voiceover man, Jason, has put together a whole little package on the Stadia tonight. We actually have a break tonight.
I just figured it could Stadia over there. So
okay. So Jason's going to talk a little bit about the Stadia. But here in studio, we'll talk about Pokemon, Bobby.
I see you've got your Switch out.
Yes, I was making Ponyta eggs before the show here. So
I don't believe that's how horses work.
Just it's Nintendo. It's fiction. Just roll with it. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about Pokemans and Pokemon actually crashing Rokus, but Pokemon also doing very well. We're also going to talk about some rumors, your favorite, but it's one of those on the plausibility scale. This one seems pretty high, and that would be Amazon potentially getting into the cloud gaming space. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And the Game Awards, I don't think you brought up. So we'll talk about that a little bit.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper if you're in the show. Just send me an MP3 or a link to a video to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf, Twitter at Bobby Blackwolf, twitch.tv/BobbyBlackWolf is where I'm at. I was going to stream Stadia stuff, but then I forgot that the Chromecast Ultra sends that HDCP signal, so I can't actually use this with my capture card. So I need to get like a splitter or something that'll work around that. Hush, hush. But that's why I haven't yet, because I can't actually stream from this device. You can also submit feedback on the episode pages at VogNetwork.com or on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but maybe for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters that have been able to support us in the Twitch streamers. And I want to talk about who's resubscribed. Act Deft resubscribed for 11 months, almost a year. SJ Warner Matt has resubscribed for 10 months. Not sure why it's 10 and 11 months. They both started at the same time. Twitch math is weird. Orange Wright resubscribed for his 11th month, and so did VG Realness resubscribed for 11 months. Thank you so much. But also, if you don't subscribe, which is fine, you can host us on your personal channel all you got to do is if you have a Twitch channel yourself, even if you are not an active streamer, if you have it just to chat on things, go ahead and add us to your auto host list because that helps our numbers. So thank you so much to the people who are currently hosting Fog Network, the Twitch channel, Nifty805, XLink777, PodCulture, Collision28, Bull7708, Fifth Dream Today, Spyro Jonathan, Tigerclaw, Mr. Rizos, ActDeft, Orange Reich, 13X Forever, Anime Jam Session, LightningFox111, Wayne12, SJ100 Matt, Johnny Woofy, Misty OLR, Hitstun, Veronica Isabel, Metal Mayhem, Dark Tatia, Travis Donovan, DragonCon Digital Media, YYR, Sia Tabiri, Critical Myth, Questbuster, AJ Twist, Loki OLR, VG Realness, and Pixel Pacas. That's a lot of names. Thank you so much. I am going to go ahead and get out of here and not stream Stadia. I'm going to stream OLR instead of Stadia. See you guys next week. Don't eat too much. Actually, eat everything. See you then. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.